Welcome to the Driving Your Marketing Podcast, where small business entrepreneurs come to discover the strategies, systems, and tools to kick their marketing into high gear. If you want to go from surviving small business owner to thriving entrepreneur, you're in the right place. Let's get ready to roll. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is Eli Delaney with Driving Your Marketing and another episode of the Driving Your Marketing Podcast. And what we do is we bring in some of the best experts, gurus, fun people that I love in the marketing world to show you the ins and outs of what you can do to market yourself online, offline, everything in between. And also without having to be scared or thinking it has to be a very complicated process, because in today's world, we do know we have to stand out in order to get our message out there in front of as many people as possible. And a lot of people are still into the myth that marketing has to be a complicated and scary process. And that's the whole point of this podcast, is to show you all the fun things that you can do to kick drive your marketing into high gear. And today I've got Nancy Fox. She is the Business Fox, and she has been a business consultant since 1999. She's coached hundreds of business owners and professionals in business development strategies, online and offline marketing, niche marketing, networking, sales, and guiding them through breakthrough levels of success. So welcome, Nancy. Thank you for being part of the show today.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be with you, Eli. I'm so psyched. I am pumped.
Cool. That's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I love it when people are psyched and pumped and ready to have some fun.
I'm ready.
Cool. So let's start off. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in your business and kind of some of your background, because I always love to share that story first.
Well, let's see. First of all, not unlike many people today, I had a corporate background before I began my business. So I am not a natural born entrepreneur. I spent 20 years in the corporate world, although my corporate career was in a really unusual arena. I was in the women's underwear business for 20 years. And my job, my expertise was in product development for women's bras. I was a bra expert. And I spent a long time, I worked with designers, and we strategized product lines for some of the biggest brands in the country. And I did a lot of traveling around the world for trend and technical direction. It was a really fun career. So it was a very strategic as well as a very high marketing-driven business. And then the marketplace changed, and I was, after a couple of decades doing the same thing over and over, you really get ready for a change. And things had changed in my industry, and I began to realize that I wanted out, but I was sort of stuck because I had expertise in one industry. That was it. But luckily, so I started to really look around and open my eyes to different possibilities. I started working with some coaches and some consultants, and I began to sort of get hooked on the whole process of being coached, and I started to really like it. And I looked around, and at that time, consulting and coaching were just taking off as a profession. And so I began my coaching business and my consulting business after some, I got some training and I had a lot of management and business experience, but now I needed to, transfer that into some new ways of working with people. I had never been an entrepreneur. I didn't know how to network. I didn't know how to sell. I didn't know how to do any of it. I knew how to market. I knew how to do presentations, but I had never been responsible for closing one piece of business. So I was very green. I was really, really wet behind the ears around that one. So, and that's how I got started. I got started by just sort of leaping in and skinning my knees and learning the hard way. So that's really how I got started.
Well, and that's so funny because, so many entrepreneurs, that's what we do. I mean, I remember those days myself when I decided, I like to use the term I'm an unemployable after I went from job to job to job and just was not happy no matter where I went. And I decided It was time to go out on my own. Mm-hmm. And I did the exact same thing. It was a matter of, okay, this is not going to do it for me. I'm going to figure this out on my own. And I just took the leap. And that's where, that's where we start. And that's so many entrepreneurs start that way. So it's great that you shared that that every one of us starts in that process. It's just a learning curve, and it's not something to be scared of, because I know a lot of people in today's world, that's what they're doing, is they're making that leap into entrepreneurship, and they just don't know really what to start, how to start, but they know that they've got something that they want to share with the world.
Well, to be really honest, one thing, this is one big change from my corporate mindset into my business entrepreneur mindset. And this is, I'd like to share that with the listeners, because it is very different. When I was in corporate America, you really needed to look like you knew everything and no one could tell you anything. I mean, that was how you were expected to, they didn't want to see you, not know what you were doing. So you really had to act like you knew everything. But once you're out on your own, one thing I realized very quickly is that I really didn't know. I knew how to build someone else's business. The truth was, I didn't know how to build my own. And the one thing that I think that I did, that I'm really grateful that I had the willingness. I want to use the word willingness. And even though I was terrified of investing in this, because there was no guarantee that I was going to make a success of my business, but I was willing to invest in getting some real professional assistance and really putting my stake in the ground and put my money and my time and my effort into the experience, because I really would never have been able to build a business without having the framework of that, somebody to guide me. And what was different back then is that there wasn't all of this information online available at the drop of at a click's notice. Today there's so much information, but it's a lot. This is great. Information is really great. How to apply it independently and in a custom manner is very important. So I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I took the time to do my research and to get people to work with me one-on-one. I think that made a huge difference, and I'm still an advocate of that. That being said, this kind of information that you're, getting the experts together this way, Eli, is really fantastic, especially when you're hand-picking your people. And that's what I think, you're curating the information for people. So I'm very honored to be part of your special people.
Well, thank you very much. And I will tell you that, in this process, you have to go through a lot of people to find the good ones. It is, and I'm sure you're familiar with that as well. Because there are so many people that have jumped into the information, information marketing world because of the fact that they see that that's where the money is. Mm-hmm. And there's those of us like you and I that we're not in it because of the money. Yes, we want to make a profit. That's what entrepreneurship is about. But we're here because we want to help people. And that's where we have the most fun. That's where our hearts really stand. And that's one reason why I do handpick everybody who comes on the show, is because of the fact that I've got to know that that person is an expert, but also their heart's in the right place as well. And that's one thing that's so important. And when somebody's out there looking for a mentor, I think that that's important as well. You need to really pay attention to where their heart really is. Are they in it because they're purely there for the money, or are they there because they really want to make a difference and want to help more people? And that alone can make a world of difference on who you work with as a mentor, who you work with from a coaching standpoint. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact that you were willing when you first started to get out there and invest in yourself, be part of coaching programs, get the right training, and find those mentors that can help you. Because that is so key. And I'll tell you from my own experience that when I first started, when I first started my first business, it was a matter of, okay, I'm going to be the Lone Ranger, and I'm just going to do it all myself. And I did fairly well with it. But I'll tell you what I've learned since I started opening up and being willing to learn from other people made the world of difference. And this, our
really
business
true.
Has grown massively, massively faster because of that.
Right. Right. Well, and kudos to you. Sometimes that's what I'm saying. Sometimes we have to, we have to learn it the hard way. That's why I think, this kind of information is really about giving people some preventative measures and some how to avoid some pitfalls, as well as giving some information. So that's why I'm so excited about it.
Cool. Well, thank you. It's so awesome to have you on here. Now, let's talk about, as we're kind of going into some of the pitfalls that people have when they first get started out by, you know, and why they need a mentor and things like that, or to get coaching, you know, all the different things we just talked about. You work with a lot of professionals out there. What are some of the biggest mistakes people make about niche marketing? Because I know that's one of the things that you talk about quite a bit, is actually about the concept of niching down your business. But what are some of the mistakes that they make?
Well, the biggest one is just, and it's rampant. People are just terrified of zeroing in on a smaller population for fear that they're going to miss some potential business. So a niche means, you know, if you're going to niche your business and use niche marketing as a tool to grow, it's almost counterintuitive, because we're saying, here, go after a smaller market in order to get bigger in your business. It doesn't sound like it's possible. And frankly, I've always, you know, even when I was on the corporate side of my business, niche marketing was always an important strategy. But today, it's even more important, because and you really said it, Eli, and that is, there are so many people out there. How are you going to stand out? How are you going to, you can't be everywhere, and you can't be everything to everybody. And so, you know, people, they feel more comfortable saying they're a generalist, or they don't really want to leave out an industry, or they don't really want to zero in on a niche, when in fact it would really bring business in faster, because when people today, we're so inundated with information that if we don't really know who someone is, what they do, and who it's for, they can't relate to it as being an ideal for themselves. It's when when people resonate with what you have for them and who you are, those two components, like what you have for them, is it relevant for them, and who you are as a person, do I feel confident with this person, do I resonate with this person, that's when you're going to have business flowing in with ease. When you try to cover so much turf that you're trying to convince everybody that you're good for them, you know, it makes it much harder, and takes longer. So today it's more important than ever, but it doesn't mean that people are still resistant and fearful of it.
Well, and you brought up a couple of really important things with that. One of them is the phrase, you can't be everything to everybody. And that means so much. And it's so funny, because you talked about niche marketing is actually counterintuitive. And I do see this. I teach a lot of people, you know, our students, I'm teaching them, you've got to niche it down. You've got to really, really fine tune your message and who your market is. And a lot of them come up with that exact same thing. And I remember the days when I was the generalist. I was like, I don't care who you are. I'll help you, you know, because we do think that way. We think in general, we think that because if we niche it down, then we're excluding other people and then we're going to lose business from it. And you're right. It doesn't work that way. It actually is exactly the opposite of what you would think. And when you talk about resonating with somebody, that I think makes a big difference, because in today's world, there are so many people that are jumping into becoming their own boss, becoming an entrepreneur, that there is high competition. You know, what used to be, if you go into a town and you want to go to a butcher, you go to Bob the Butcher because he's the only one in town. Now you got 500 different butchers, and you got to figure out, okay, what is it you're going to be a specialist in, and who is going to be your target market, so you can really just hone down on the ones that are going to resonate with you, and they're going to love working with you as opposed to the other 499 people.
Right. The more information that's out there with a click, the more important it is than ever to be a specialist. That's why, you know, doctors did it, and, you know, lawyers do it, and it's become, and now consultants are doing it, and coaches are doing it, and it's even when you have identified your niche, now you have to drill down even further and zero in on what you are offering in that unique niche that's unique to them, from all the others. So it really is a two-part equation. Actually, it's two parts on one side of the equal sign. So it isn't just about what's your niche. It's also what's your niche and then what's your secret sauce for that niche, and then you can actually get the results. So it's two parts.
All right, cool. And we're going to talk about, I want to talk about the secret sauce in a second, but one thing I do want to ask about, you did bring up one really important point when you mentioned doctors, There's the specialist and the generalist. And I like to use this term of, the brain surgeon always makes a whole lot more money than the generalist does. And you have a phrase called the rich niche. I want to talk a little bit about that. And, how is it you find your rich niche? Because that's one thing you want is, and this works very, very well once you've actually implemented it, is once you niche down to the right market, you actually can get paid a lot more than you would if you were just a generalist. So let's talk about that a little bit.
So sometimes people think that when I say rich niche, I mean that the people that are in your niche have to be rich. Sometimes that's true. But sometimes it's just that there's so much opportunity in a particular niche that it provides great riches for everybody. So let me say what I mean by that. So when you're looking at who you want to be gearing your business toward, who you want to be appealing to, you really want to be looking at who is your absolute, but you want to be creating a composite of your absolute ideal perfect client. You have to have a specific profile in your mind, not just about what industry they're in, perhaps, or what unique qualities they have, or what circumstances they're in. So, for example, let me give you an example of a rich niche that's not necessarily based on rich people. So, when pa parents who have college, about children who are about to go to college, and when they really want to help their children, their teenage children, get into the college of their dreams, they will find a way and will pay almost anything to get the kind of information and influence to help their children get into a particular college. They just will. They will find a way because they want their children going into the college that they want or that their son or daughter wants. They may not be wealthy. In fact, most of them aren't, but they will spend riches to get that to happen. In other words, who's really motivated, who's willing to do almost anything to get a particular piece of information, result, and so on. On the flip side, there are some niches that are more lucrative than others, and I'll give you an example. I do a lot of work with people in the public accounting arena. And in there are many, I didn't when I first began and I started to get into this niche, I didn't know the first thing about public accounting. I didn't know anything about any kind of accounting, really, but I understand the service business and I learned. I really went to work on learning all about it because I liked the service sector. But what I found was that there are certain businesses, certain segments of business that've got sort of this bright future and some segments that have a very bleak future. And when I was working with these accounts and they were deciding about what industries to focus on or their niche, I would really work with them and say, what niche has a rich future? Which one has a bright future? And I had some accountants who were really finding they were very, very clever, and they one for example, one of my clients zeroed in on the franchising industry as a great opportunity, not on the franchisee side, but on the franchisor side. Why? Because the franchisor has a lot of ongoing yearly work to do, and it's going to have to report every single year. So it's an ongoing stream of business, and they have multi locations. Great business model. That's a great niche. That's a rich niche. On the flip side, some of my accounting clients, they had a lot of experience in, let's say, my old world, the apparel manufacturing world. But hey, I got out of that world because it didn't have a bright future. They were struggling. They were going offshore. They didn't have money. They were never paying their bills on time. And so the accountants who were focusing on that niche were focusing on a not rich niche. So I'm just giving you the comparison of how you select your niche. You want to be looking for a niche that has a lot of opportunity and has a lot of potential for the future. So you have to look a little bit ahead.
Very cool. And I love the way that you share that example of the bright future versus the bleak future. And that really means a lot. And everybody listening, you really need to pay attention to that. And I would suggest you write this down because when you're going into a niche, you really need to look at what is their future looking like? What kind of opportunities are opening up for them as well, along with what's their just overall attitude? I think that has a lot to do with it as well, because I have found that there are certain industries that I've gone after in the past that I thought were going to be a great niche for me. And I found out that they're wonderful people, but they tend to be kind of pessimists. And obviously, that's not going to work very well if I'm looking at helping them grow. And that's where we all have to kind of stop and think about that. And I even had that one of my coaches came to me and said, I love this group of people that you've got right here, but they're not the right ones because they don't have the right attitude. So I think that the mental attitude, the mindset has just as much to do with it as their financial capabilities as well.
That's one of the reasons, that, to your point, Eli, that's one of the reasons people ask me, you know, when you first started your coaching business, why didn't you go into your old industry and coach them? And because they weren't interested. I don't think I only had one apparel client in my entire career as a coach, as a consultant. And that the industry in it, you know, primarily really wasn't focused on seeking out consultants or input on how to grow, and they were sort of doing everything the way they had always done it, and they were reactive as opposed to strategic, in my, you know, just generally speaking. So, you know, it just wasn't a great avenue. It wasn't a bright future that I wanted. They didn't have the attitude, but others did. So you know, to your point, you know, who wants to help? Who wants to grow? Who's hungry? Who's motivated? That's a great niche. That could be a really rich niche. So that's a good point.
Yeah, and the one thing you just said is very important, I think, is the hungry and motivated. You know, that's one thing that I found too in different niches that you got some people that are they're hungry because they're kind of in that desperate need, they're ready to move, but they're not as motivated as they should be. And you got to watch out for that one as well. So that I think those are two keys to find your rich niche is they've got to be hungry and motivated. They have an issue that they need to have resolved, and they're motivated to definitely find that solution at the same time. Now, as we're, you know, you're talking about this, let's say we found our rich niche. Now, one of the things that's really important is being able to talk to those people and really resonate with them from the right way. So how are you communicating with them differently than you would a different niche per se?
You know, this is it's really a key question. So the way let me tell you a little of my experience first, and then I'll tell you what people can actually do about this to tactically address the issue. You know, I had to when I first began, I had two niche audiences. I was working with corporate executives and coaching them in their careers, and I had professional service providers. They speak very different languages. So, for example, in corporations, most of them were making a product, and they would, when they wanted to get more business, they would call it sales. But in the professional services world, they never use the word sales. They use the word business, the term business development. So I had to learn the terminology and listen to the language that each population was speaking, and I couldn't really speak exactly the same to both audiences. Also, in professional services, each person who is a service provider is almost like a mini entrepreneur. It's like an intrapreneur. They might be working in a firm, but they're building their own business. In a corporation, their mindset is the corporation takes care of me and I get a paycheck. Very different mindset. So I had to speak two different ways to two different populations of people. So how did I learn how to do that? Well, first, the most important thing is to talk to people in each niche and listen, not listen from what you want to tell them. Listen to what they are saying directly and use that. Listen to the terms they're using. Listen to the phraseology. Listen to the mindset and read and listen to between the lines. And then the other things that now today we are so fortunate we can go online. There are thousands of forums that are sort of designated by category. So you could go into LinkedIn and you could be reading the forums and the discussions that are taking place in different market segments or different niches. So if I'll give you a perfect example. On LinkedIn, there is a group I'm part of, which is the physicians group on LinkedIn. And I read their posts and I read their terminology and I read their discussions, and it sounds one way. But when I go into the lawyer forums and the accounting forums very different. They're just different. They are both, they're all professionals, right? But they have their own little lingo. And then when I go into the coaching groups, completely different. The coaching groups are much more touchy-feely, much more heartfelt, much more, they're much more intuitive in their conversations, and so they're very different. You need to be speaking the language. That's also why when I send out my marketing messaging, I'm right now in the process of segmenting out my populations because the languaging needs to be different for two different populations.
Right. And that makes so much sense, too. And I love the fact that you suggested using LinkedIn as one tool that you can actually get out there and just basically hang out in the groups and, you know, listen to what they say. Start listening to the phrases they're using. Learn their lingo so you can talk to them because, you know, you're perfectly right. I've worked with accountants. I've worked with bookkeepers in that world. And I've also worked with a lot of coaches. And they are totally different people. And you'll find that as you start niching down and figuring out who you really resonate the best with, that the way they talk, their personality types are totally different. And, you know, that you mentioned the touchy-feely in the coach's world, and that's really, really common. You try that with somebody that's more in the bookkeeping or accounting world, and they're not going to get it at all because that's just not their personality type.
That's not what appeals to them. They're very factual. They're very, show me, demonstrate, give me the facts. They're much more introverted. When I say introverted, it's actually, it's not a judgment in any way. It's more like a definition of a personality preference. Mm-hmm. So they tend to do things more on a lone basis. They're more, you know, they're not out there with people as much, and it's not their favorite thing. That's why they chose the profession they did. So we have to really resonate with people in their world, not in ours, and then translate that into the languaging when we are starting to work on connecting with them in different places. But in addition to LinkedIn, the groups are one way. Another way is you can Google, let's say you want to be looking at, let me give you a different, now here's a non-industry niche, mother entrepreneurs, women who are entrepreneurs and they're also moms. And there are certain characteristics and lifestyle issues that relate to mom entrepreneurs that are different than other kinds of entrepreneurs, and so that becomes a designation or a niche. And if you go on, if you Google mom entrepreneur forums, you'll start to see different conversations online that are happening for that niche, and you can start to listen for some of the, and then you'll start to learn some of their challenges, issues, questions, problems, and the things they want solutions for.
Cool. And you can do that with anything. It doesn't matter whatever niche you're looking at getting into is just go in and go to Google and type in whatever that niche is, say, you know, accountant forums or bookkeeping forums or coaching forums or whatever your niche is, whatever niche you're looking at getting into, or maybe it's a niche you already have, but you want to develop even further into it, but just use, you know, look for those forums, look for those areas of where they congregate and actually hang out, because that's where you can actually hang out with them and basically be the fly on the wall, just sit there listening. And the cool thing about it is once you're ready and you feel comfortable, you can also start posting, helping them out, and start building your reputation with that too.
Yes, especially when you're using the terminology that resonates with them.
Right. Cool. So, you know, one thing, as we're talking about, you know, the rich niche and finding the niche that's going to work for you, do you look at creating a menu of, you know, your products and your packages, your services, things like that? Do you look at changing the way you package that stuff up based on a niche as well?
Definitely. And, let me give you, I think sometimes examples are just the most easy way to do this. When I began working with lawyers and accountants, they work on a billable hour for the most part. That's the way they operate, rightly or wrongly. And they wanted me to provide my services on a billable hour model. And that's not how I work. I work in monthly sequence or packages of different services, and I package them up. Sometimes I'll do a group program, and it has X number of modules. Sometimes it's a, you know, X, you know, a program. Sometimes it's, or there's a combination of things. Anyway, it's really funny. The first time I closed a major piece of business with an accounting firm, it was so hysterical when I went through the negotiations with the managing partner, because I was giving him packages and he was saying, but I don't understand. And I would explain it and he would go, but I don't understand. And then eventually I got it. What he was trying to do was interpret how much I was making an hour, how much he was willing to pay me an hour and how much I would be getting an hour. So in the end, he needed to hear it in his world, in his language. So I worked it out in his way. And I actually wound up, the way I designed this, the way I put it together, I wound up getting a higher hourly number than I would have gotten if I had packaged it up, only because, you know, I just started to see how he was thinking. And it ultimately worked out to my favor. He didn't know that. That's okay with me. He got what he wanted. He wanted to have an hourly number. Then he could relate to it in terms of how much it was, because he calculates his profit. He knows exactly how much profit he's making in his firm. He knows how many hours his people are working, how much he's billing, how much he's taking in, and what the shortfall is, if there is any. That's all he really wanted to know when he was, when it was coming to my services as well. Had to understand it needed to be in his language.
Right, and that's cool to kind of think about it that way, because, you know, a lot of times we look at, especially when we're growing our business, we look at getting away from the hourly model, because that's not, you know, that's not the way for success as a whole. You know, time for dollars is not the best way, you know, best model for us to go after. So we try to kind of work our way away from that. But at the same time, you have to stop and think about that. And that's one thing I haven't thought about it in that term before, is that some people, that is purely how they think. And, you know, accountants and in the financial world, that makes sense. So that's a great example.
And it's also Eli, it's now changing too. Like, that was several years ago. And since then, they started to realize that the billable hour could be, it was sort of, especially in the legal area. Now there's value fee-based, pricing, and there's also package pricing and flat rates and all this kind of stuff. A lot of things changed since then. So that was then, and this is now. And that's another thing. You have to always be, you can't, like, nothing is forever. So to your point, and I really think this is important for people to be hearing, I am not an advocate of the billable hour by any means. For any business owner, it's really not a good business model. It might be great if you own a firm, and it's great because you can calculate your profit. But truthfully, people, you know, there's what I also got to see is there's a huge shortfall. People are, they are working the hours, they're billing them. They're not always taking all the money in. They lose out. So I know that happens as well. So that's why the billable hour isn't a good business model. But what's important is, so I'm a firm believer in packages for your niche. It's great if you can teach your niche how the benefit of your packages will serve them better. That's a better direction. But sometimes you need to take a little step in that direction first.
Right. No, that makes total sense with that. And it's kind of cool the way you just put it. And also, you said something else that's really important, is that nothing is forever. Always be evolving with your niche. You know, you've got to realize that there, over time, things are going to change there in their world just as much as it's changing in yours. And you have to make sure you stay on top of that as well.
Yeah, very much so.
So let's talk about, you know, once you started, you figured out your ideal niche, what do you, you know, what are the elements you need to put in to compose, you know, your perfect elevator pitch that's going to talk to them specifically?
Well, the number one thing, and I've come to this, you know, I've created a whole process for how to design an elevator pitch, and it's a three-step process, and it's got to be, I have different factors. You can see it on my blog. I'll give folks a place to go and find it. But in creating this for your niche, number one, if you can, let me back up. You must really identify the biggest problem that they want solved. So, a person who's buying a home wants to, you know, when they're looking for picking the right real estate broker, they want someone who's going to help them navigate the, not make a mistake. Yes, they want the best deal, but the problem they want to avoid, the solution they want is, please help me avoid overpaying and help me close a deal as fast as possible. Those are the problems they want solved. And so very often as business owners, we will pitch the benefit but not give the solution. And the solution to the big painful problem is the emotional component that goes into the elevator pitch, which really gets people's attention. So it's the emotional component that people don't know how to include in a pitch. And it can't be like, boo-hoo-hoo, but it really needs to be, here's my pain point. Here's the pain point I know you have, and I'm going to take it away for you. And that's really what people need to be thinking about in their elevator pitches. So I'll give you an example. Lawyers absolutely hate selling. They just hate selling. They don't want to sound like a salesperson. They just want to be really professional. They want to look really smart. They want everybody to like them, and they just want clients. That's what they want. They don't want to have to go out and sell. They just want to do, give people the legal service and help them get the, help them be successful in the case. So most of them do not like to sell, and they are terrified of it and are embarrassed by it. And knowing that this is an emotional situation for them, when I give my elevator speech, I will tell them, I will take the embarrassment and pain away. I will show you how to not be embarrassed or feel any pain in the marketing or business development process. So notice I didn't use selling. I used business development. That's pretty much what I do. And when they get that they don't have to be embarrassed or feel ashamed and that they're going to get business, it resonates with them on an emotional, subliminally emotional level. And that's really important. And you need to do it really fast, and you need to get to it quickly, because all you really want in your elevator pitch is for them to say, really tell me more about that. Like, just like now, if I say to people on this line, on the call, so I'm going to show you how to like take all of the complication out of identifying a niche that's going to really thrive for you in your business, you're going to really love working with, and that's going to be very lucrative. It gives people a real sense of, that's what they really want. They want the solution to how to figure it out. It's the solution. That's what's important.
Right. And that makes perfect sense. And that's the cool thing about the way you put it out there, is figuring out what their pain point is and then offering them a solution. And that's, that's a kind of a basic concept in marketing, but so many people miss that. And if you, once you define, here's the problem that they have and here's the solution that I can provide to help you with that problem, it makes the sales process so much easier, right?
Yes. The reason people are missing it is because there's a nuance. The difference between a benefit and a solution is big. Solution really is getting at the pain point, but a benefit is more like something. It is a takeaway, but it's not necessarily driving in the stake into the, alleviating the pain. That's the issue, and that's why you have to think about. Here's an example. One of my clients is in the, she's been doing programs for weight loss, and so in her elevator pitch, it's all about, how to avoid gaining the weight back, right? So that's a benefit. But the pain point is the, embarrassment of the yo-yo. It's humiliation, and that's the pain point. And so the solution is taking the embarrassment and the frustration and the depression around the yo-yo effect. And the benefit, of course, is weight loss and, looking good and feeling good and all that. But it's not the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very different. People are walking around. They're not saying the reason I want to lose weight is because I'm embarrassed to buy a bathing suit. But that's really what's going on.
Right. Very cool. All right, so let's talk. You mentioned early on, you mentioned your secret sales sauce. Let's talk about that terminology a little bit, and I'd like you to go into more details on that because I don't want to forget about that before we finish up.
Okay. So a secret sauce is how you deliver the what you are the methodology that you are delivering, or the focal point of what you're delivering, and the way that you deliver it, which is unique from other people. I'm trying to think of a secret sauce. Okay, so let's use Coke, which is, you know, Coke has the secret sauce of their, the taste of their form. It's a secret formula, and they've had it for years, and nobody knows it. And you know the difference because when you, I haven't had a Coke in a long time, but if you taste Pepsi or you taste Coke, you know which is Pepsi and you know which is Coke, even though they're both cola.
Right.
And there's just, it's indescribable, but it's definitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are many, many coaches, and let's just say I am teaching niche marketing. There are other people who are teaching niche marketing. It's not unique, right? People are teaching niche marketing. So the secret sauce here is that I'm really going to show you how to find the niche and also how to combine that with the unique system, method, approach, maybe even your personal brand, maybe the languaging, maybe it's a trick, or not a trick, meaning in a tip that's going to help people to not just find their niche or their rich niche, but gain access and get connected to them and actually attract them in. So I'd like to give you an example of a secret sauce. So people very often, they may have heard of Fabienne Fredrickson, and I really like to use her because she's a really good example of a secret sauce. Mm-hmm. Fabienne is a very, very well-known, very well-respected coach in our industry, and her niche is mostly service entrepreneurs. A lot of coaches, a lot of people who are on the call today, they're coaches, consultants, authors, speakers, you know, information-based business owners. That's her market, very heavily oriented to women, but not exclusive to. That's not necessarily what she focuses on. She doesn't just say, you know, women entrepreneurs, although some, you know, some people out there focus only on women. But her secret sauce has been teaching people how to systematize their business. That was how she began. That's what actually brought her the biggest leap in her business, when she showed other service business owners not just how to do what they do, but how to systematize it. So that was her secret sauce. And when she showed them how to put what they do into a process, that's when she began to have, she pulled herself away from the crowd, stood out, and people were drawn to that because that was you know, a unique, it had not been done before. It really wasn't focused on before. So you need to find, number one, the who and the unique way of what you do for people. And that the secret sauce is a whole process. Developing that is a process in and of itself.
Very cool. And that's a great way to look at it. And you look at, you know, there in any industry, it doesn't matter whether you're selling a weight loss shake or coaching or anything, you know, at carpet cleaning, doesn't matter what industry you're in, having that unique process, system, or, you know, whatever that is, whatever it is that makes you different than everybody else, that is what makes the difference as a whole and gets you away from, you know, again, that 499 other people that are in your neighborhood doing the exact same process, same system.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That is so big. And I have a phrase that I like to say called the wallflower never gets the sale. Because if you're just like everybody else doing a whole lot of the same thing the same way, you're not going to get different results. You're going to get the same results.
Right.
And that is what stands out. I mean, you know, in our industry, you and I do a lot of the same type of stuff, but you have your unique ability and I have my unique ability. And that's what makes it so we're not really, I don't consider it competitors. And I've always been in a collaborative mindset versus a competitive mindset. We may sell and actually do a lot of the same type of stuff, but we each have our own unique way of doing it. And what that does is that attracts the right people to us. And that's what makes the difference.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's true. At the core level of this, there is only one you. And so really, you know, there isn't it's not really about competition. It's about, you know, how do you really create your point of distinction on both the messaging, the market, and also the delivery system. So I think that there's really a lot of, you know, there requires a lot of strategy. And this is where I think, you know, you were asking me earlier today what's a misstep, what's a pitfall. I don't think people really spend enough time at the beginning on strategy and proving out their strategy. And so what happens is they wind up getting out there and falling down, and then they get discouraged, and then sometimes they get up and sometimes they just give up. So it's really, that's why strategy in the beginning and brainstorming with other people and doing the research to prove out, does this resonate with people, is really not a step to be missed.
Awesome. And I couldn't agree with you more on that, is that people don't spend enough time on the strategy side. That is one of my big things that I love. You know, I'm always putting it out there. It's like, you've got to have a plan. You've got to really strategize what you're doing and not just jumping on the latest, greatest, cool tactic that's out there because that's what everybody says. That's where you're going to make your million. It's about the strategy that's behind it all that makes those things work or not work.
Right. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, now, people are, you know, out there marketing up these formulas, and if you just follow the formula and just do it, it'll work. And it does work for certain markets, and sometimes it really will not work for other markets. And you can't just assume that one formula fits all. It doesn't go that way. Having a formula or a system or a methodology, again, it needs to resonate with your niche. You have to really know your people. You have to know how they're listening, what's important in their lives, what appeals to them, what turns them off. It's really, you know, they all go hand in hand. So, and I've heard people say, you know, just follow my formula. It really works. And it does work for certain markets. I know that. I believe that. But I also think people can get misled by that and then be disappointed. Mm-hmm.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more with that. And I've seen that time and time again. And that's where the strategy comes in, because once you have the strategy, you figured out who your niche is, you know how to communicate with them properly, then those formulas become more effective. You know, I've seen a lot of great programs out there that people bought and they get zero results from them. It's because they haven't done what I like to call the foundation stuff first.
Yes. Yes.
Once you have the foundation stuff, you can decide whether that tactic will work for you or not. And a lot of times it will, but it only does it if you have the foundation in place first. If you have the right message with the right market to begin with, then those things can work a lot better than if you're just, you know, shooting blanks, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is where I think it's very fortunate that I had the kind of business training that I did. I mean, we would never have taken a product to market without some, you know, test marketing. And it was unheard of. You know, we had great ideas, great, wonderful. Remember, it was a creative process. It was, you know, there was no question. It was related to the fashion industry on some level, but we would never have brought a product out to market without doing some testing of it. It would have been, you know, business suicide. Mm-hmm. But somehow business owners and entrepreneurs, listen, we are, as entrepreneurs, we are cut from a different cloth. We are intuitive. We are, you know, we're hungry, motivated, risk takers. We'll do whatever. We'll work hard. We'll work, you know, we'll do whatever it takes. And we will take a flyer. And there's nothing wrong with taking a flyer. But it's much better to take an educated flyer than it is to take a non-educated flyer.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Awesome. So as we're starting to wrap up, we're starting to run out a little bit of time here. You have one more thing I want to talk about in this, and this is something that I find very, very important, is when you find your rich niche, you've got your market down there, what about finding the right joint venture partners? Because that is, in my opinion, that is probably the fastest way to grow your business. And so many entrepreneurs out there still have no clue about how this works, and especially if you've got your right niche in play.
Great question. And I've done joint venture partnerships that have worked and ones that did not work. So what I found has worked really well has been to partner with people. You know, again, the partnership is all about building your platform or your list. on some, if you're marketing on the web, you're going to need to have an email marketing list, and that's essential. And even today, even if you're not, you still want to have an email marketing list. But building your platform, meaning people who are following you, who are your fans, and I don't mean just Facebook fans, I mean people who really follow you and subscribe to your blog and really are interested in what you have to say. Building a platform, whether it's on the ground, meaning geographically, it's locally, or whether it's bigger, you have to really think about these joint venture partners. And what I like to say is, you want to be talking to and working with people who are in your niche, in your world, but that don't do anything competitive to you. So I'll give you, let's see if I can give you some examples. So when I first started, one of the things I really wanted to do years ago, which was, it actually turned out to be better, bigger and better than I ever could have hoped. I wanted to host my own networking events, and I wanted to invite, who is my rich niche? Lawyers, accountants, and bankers. So I partnered with an insurance company and another consultant. Both of these folks had the same market as me. They had a list of people. I had a list of people. They were willing to fund it. They were willing to fund the effort. And we weren't competitive because they were selling insurance. They were selling other kinds of consulting. I was doing the coaching. And it was completely non-competitive. We all came together, shared our contacts, invited, and we built. For 2 years, we had probably the single most successful professional service networking event in New York City. And we had people, every month we would invite them, and we had hundreds of people coming to our, and they were all high-level professionals. And they were selected that way. So we didn't invite everybody, we invited partners. And we invited the higher level people in the firms. And so we had a very targeted, rich niche of people that we networked with every single month. And I partnered with them. So here was my contribution. They put the money in. We all shared the list. And I put the sweat equity in. Now, here was what was so good about that. My little secret sauce in that was they thought that was really, they were lucking out because they didn't want to do the work. But what that really wound up was, for me, was I got in front of everybody and I introduced everybody every month. I introduced the speaker. I picked the speaker. So it gave me tremendous leverage, and it built my personal brand in a big city like New York. It wasn't so easy. So when I say that it's really strategic, you really need to find people who've got, they're influencers, they've got a good list, and you can share the effort with them, but they're not competitive to you. But the biggest mistake people make is they try to do joint ventures with people who don't have a good list or don't have good connections. So they wind up having a mediocre result, and then it's disappointing. Find people who have a good list. And I put sweat, you know, here was my offering. I had sweat equity. So, you know, you have to find something you have to find something that will attract them. And if you don't have a list, find something else.
Right. Well, and one thing that I think that people need to keep in mind with that is there's going to be a testing process, and you're going to have some winners and some losers along the way too. I mean, I've had that too, where you just get out there and you build these relationships the best you can, and you always, you know, keep the positive mindset no matter what, and you're going to run into a couple of duds along the way, and that's just going to be life. So don't let that get you down. Don't get disappointed. Just keep going, knowing, you know, that person may have just not been the right fit, and that's okay. Just move on to the next one. You know, if that's a situation that you run into. I mean, I had one time, I actually had a somebody who wanted to mail for me to do a webinar with them, had a list of 16,000 people, and I was very excited about this. And lo and behold, he didn't have a very responsive list. And, you know, in the webinar, I think we had like four people show up on the webinar.
Oh,
I mean, that's
out of 16,000?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
And
that's really great that you're sharing that, Eli, because I think people out there don't really, that's so great you're sharing that. Thank you. I think people think that, oh my God, 16,000 people, well, naturally they have a gazillion people in their network and it's all going to be great. The numbers, they can be very misleading.
Very much so. And the other side of it too is I've had people that have a list of 300 because they haven't built their list as much as you or I might think they should, but they have a very, very responsive list, and I've had amazing results out of those.
Right.
So you never know. You're always going to find some that are just the opposite of what you think. I mean, I've had people that we've done webinars together because that's one of the major ways that I'll do joint ventures with people is we do webinars back and forth for each other's lists. And I found some people that they come to me, they're like, well, I don't know because I don't have that big of a list. And I'm like, I'll give it a try. It's okay. And if we only get a few people, then we only get a few people. It's more practice. Worst case scenario, I got one more time to practice, but I got to practice in front of a live audience instead of me doing it in front of my computer by myself. So
So I
you
think
look at
that's
it from that
really great.
positive
That's
set.
good. That's really good idea. That's very good advice. And then once you get the experience, so let me go back to strategy again. Now start to look for people again strategically who, now let's take your to your point that has this responsive list, an appreciably sized list that fits your market, that fits your niche, where you can bring something to each other, and there's a what's in it for both of you, and then you can cross promote.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I've got those as well. And we've got, over time, this one that I was talking about was a couple of years ago.
Isn't that
But we've
interesting,
had,
though?
yeah, it's like you always, you never know what's going to happen. The biggest thing is you just got to get out there and run with it and be strategic and be intelligent about what you're doing, making sure that you've got the right people as a whole, but just keep in mind that you're going to have a couple of duds. And that's okay. That's just a learning curve, and that's just an experience, and you take the best out of it.
Right. Absolutely. I
All
agree with
right.
that.
Cool.
Great.
Well, I think we are about out of time. You know what? It's amazing when we have great conversations that work so well because then I go through and I look and I'm like, oh, we're already over an hour, which is awesome. That's what I love to get out of some of these interviews. So let's go ahead and wrap things up. I got one question that I always ask everybody is if there's one thing that our listeners can get out there and take action on right now, what would be that one thing you would advise for them?
I really think it's take the time to go through some exercises to identify in a very strategic, step-by-step manner how to identify your niche and to really zero in on it and not feel fearful that you're sort of slicing it smaller than you think it should be. And if people are interested, by the way, I offer a free toolkit for how to identify your ideal niche. And it's called the Rich Niche Kit, and it's on my blog, and you can get it there. It's at www.thebusinessfox.com/blog, and I encourage you to take advantage of that and go through. But don't take any shortcuts. Actually, go through the process of that, and it will make a huge difference for you.
Awesome. And then you can go download that right now. That way you got, start working on it. Spend the time, half an hour, an hour, just don't download it and stick it as a digital file on your computer. Down, print it out, get going on it. Because I'll tell you what, I have found that every business that I have worked with, when we start niching it down and we find that information, their business starts exploding. We found it with our own business. I found it with my own clients. This is what we're talking about today with Nancy. This is the way you're really going to make a difference in your business.
And it just so happens that I'm actually going to be posting a new blog post on something that I call niche networking, and it's all about how to tie your niche market to the kind of networking and where you network and how to meet the right people. So
Awesome.
be on the
Cool.
lookout for that.
Very cool. All right. So, Nancy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is an awesome interview, and you shared some amazing stuff with everybody today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure. I am glad that you felt that your listeners will get value out of it, and it's my pleasure to work with you. You're just an awesome interviewer and a great collaborator. So thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, thank you. And if there's anything that I can ever do to help you out, just reach out and let me know.
And same here.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey there, this is Eli again, and I got a question for you. Do you have a roadmap for marketing your business? If you're consistently looking for new marketing ideas just to keep your business going, then you need to check out smallbusinessmarketingroadmap.com. and download the free special report that I created to help you create a marketing plan that will thrive in any economy. Again, that's smallbusinessmarketingroadmap.com. Go get it, read it, and start the road trip of your lifetime. See you on the other side.